Welcome to episode 16 of Transform Together, the Holistican podcast meetup. I'm Johannes Schartau, and today I'm talking to Lily David. Lily's one of the co-developers of Sociocracy 3.0, a practical guide and collection of patterns for evolving organizations. It combines ideas from sociocracy, agile, lean, and organizational development to help people collaborate more effectively, make better decisions, distribute authority, and respond to complexity without having to redesign the whole organization overnight. A while ago, I attended Sociocracy 3.0 training by Lily and James Priest. It was hands down one of the best learning experiences I've ever been a part of. So I couldn't wait to get Lily on the podcast and dive deeper into some of the topics that are relevant to organizations today. Lily, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Johannes. It's great to be here.
Okay, just to start out, for people who are not familiar with Sociocracy 3.0, could you give a brief summary of what it is and why people should care about it?
Yes. So you already mentioned it's a collection of patterns that help people to collaborate more effectively. And when I say patterns, I mean either a process or a guideline or a practice. You can think of these patterns as templates or Lego pieces that you can use to, in your organization, kind of plug them in to the places where it's needed to address a certain challenge that you're facing. And these patterns came about initially through breaking down certain methodologies like sociocratic circle method. That's one of the main ones. But also Scrum and other agile frameworks and Kanban. Basically, my colleagues, Bernard and James, when they came together initially, they wanted to put together a set of resources that brings sociocracy to the agile and lean world, you know. Because I think still to this day, what sociocracy brings as a concept is a way of making decisions and a way of addressing the topic of governance that fits very well with, the agile way of thinking and doing things. So when they started to put together these resources, they realized, wait a minute, is there somebody who does all the things, like all the steps, all the different practices at once? And the answer is no. Actually, what people do is they kind of try some things out. They keep what works. They discard everything else. And they carry on doing things. So Sociocracy 3.0 is encouraging is doing precisely that, but in a more conscious and intentional way. So rather than kind of, okay, we're just going to try things out and see what sticks, the idea is more that you are identifying and responding to priorities in your organization, and you're pulling in patterns to address them. So obviously, right now I think there's about like 70 something patterns, so it's quite a big collection, and over time we've developed the body of free resources so you can learn about, like read about it online. And one key element to understand about these patterns is that they are tied together by seven principles, which I would say they are the basis. I kind of imagine a world, a future world, where there will be no patterns needed anymore. And what would happen is that people would kind of have an embodied experience of those principles and act accordingly. So I'm just going to mention the principles, which are probably familiar for the people in the agile world: continuous improvement and empiricism, And then there is equivalence, which refers to involving people in decisions that affect them. Consent, which is a way of making decisions by checking and by inviting and resolving objections. And transparency, and I think there might be another one. I think the one that I missed was accountability, which is interesting because what it says is that you respond when something is needed in the organization and you accept your share of responsibility for the whole. So that's it. Maybe a good one to forget because I can emphasize it a bit more.
So can you, you just mentioned that organizations will generally pull in patterns based on their priorities or based on some kind of need that they identified. Are there any kinds of typical paths that organizations might walk, or what do they frequently start with? How do they scale, or like how do they pull in a bit more once they've experimented a bit? Is there anything that we've seen over the years that might be called typical?
Yeah. I kind of could lump of many different cases that I know of in two different categories. One is a situation where you have somebody in a team that have some degree of authority and influence in their own domain that are kind of finding resonance with the principles and this way of working, and they're trying to bring some of these patterns in. So it happens, so to say, locally. And there is an experimentation more on a kind of team level, maybe with like smaller things like decision making and so on. And the other category is when people that kind of have authority over the whole organization are interested in pursuing a path where they want to kind of live more of these principles, and they're looking to S3 to kind of offer guidance in terms of the patterns. What I find interesting is that there's pitfalls in both cases, right? I think I've seen a lot of success in situations where in the context of a team or a department, there's amazing progress being done. And there is this sort of glass ceiling that you reach at some point where the rest of the organization is not ready, in inverted commas, or there's a change in leadership, and from one day being supported in their experimentation, the next day they're shut off. And so there is an increased pressure from the outside, and sometimes experiments kind of are stopped or reversed. So that is something that I see happening. And the other one, when there is a top-down, let's say, approach, then you have all the other problems of people are like, wait, but I don't know what this is, kind of sounds weird, is this another framework? They have resistance to the terms and so on. So that has its own challenges. And I would say that there are many cases that I'm, working with sometimes with leaders in organization, and they're saying it doesn't work. It doesn't work because people don't get it, because, I don't know, we're too stuck in old patterns and old ways of behaving and so on. And I think all of these things are true. I think the challenge is that people kind of associate the fact that it's not working, that the problem is with the tool that you're trying to use, not maybe with the way you're trying to use that tool, or some of the sort of unaddressed issues that are revealed by using the tool. Sometimes you bring in this idea, okay, let's do consent decision making, let's ask people if they have any objections, and then it's kind of like taking, pulling the rug and realizing there's a lot of dirt underneath you're trying to hide the whole time. And then, that can be problematic. So I would say that kind of anything and everything that can happen will happen. And yeah, the confusion is sometimes think that the problem you're having is the specific pattern you're trying to use.
All of what you're describing sounds oddly familiar, and it's also what I hear any kind of method, but any people I talk to, they're describing very similar things. Just to check, do you have the perfect solution for this? And do you know how to make people do whatever we want them to do? Like, how do we solve this, Lily? Can you help me?
Yeah, I'm gonna take out my magic wand,
yes,
and make it all better.
That's what I was hoping for.
So what comes to say is that I have a lot of compassion for where we are as people and where we are in our organizational context. And in a way, I think more of that is useful, because if we bring in compassion and we understand that most of the time, not all the time, people are doing their best with what they know, with what they've learned, with what they have, then the conversation it's a little bit more peaceful and can be a little bit more productive. So I would say a radical acceptance of where we are can help us, can free us up of the burden of needing to be anything different than that. And if we open ourselves fully to what is present and what is happening, then we can sort of accept reality in a different way and maybe have a more realistic idea of what's possible. Sometimes what needs to happen is for the organization to stop, to end. What needs to happen is for a project to die. Sometimes what needs to happen is maybe a more radical transformation. And I don't know, I'm just that's kind of the thing that comes to mind. It's not, S3 is not going to save anyone, and unfortunately. But also fortunately, because whenever we put our hopes and dreams and expectations into something that is external, like a tool we want to use, a pattern or whatever, however you want to call it, it's we are giving away some of our power. We are giving away some of our agency, our autonomy, our power to decide. And it's many times unconscious that we're doing this. But I think there's each one of us makes a decision, whether it's conscious or not, on a daily basis to stay in an organization, to continue doing the same thing that they're doing, or to do something different. And whenever we decide, I recently found out that the root of the word to decide means to cut, decidere, so which is to cut alternatives, to a way of interpreting that. And that speaks to me a lot, because when we choose a path and we make a decision, that means we're doing this and all the other options kind of fall down. And sometimes whenever you make a decision, you need to follow it through to see the results and persevere when it's difficult, but also you need to know when to kind of stop and give up on that. I might be digressing, but that just what came for me to say.
No, you're right on point. That's exactly what we're here for. Thank you so much. And I think what you just mentioned, starting from a place of let's just accept what is happening here and just sit with that emotion, and maybe we don't immediately need to change anything, or we don't need to jump from one method to the next. Maybe that is one of the more powerful interventions, and it's also independent of any tool that you choose, right?
Totally. Yeah. And I have to say, you know, I arrived at the point where I don't mention Sociocracy 3.0 anymore with my clients. I mean, obviously, all of them know about it because, and that's why they call me in. But in my work with people in organization, I hardly ever mention it. And because I see that whenever you start using a term that the people don't use or they have already an association with what it means, it becomes an impediment. And so what I am doing is, I've learned by reflecting on it, what I'm doing is applying many, many of the patterns and a lot of the principles without doing it kind of, so to say, by the book or without using that terminology. And I find that that works best. And there is obviously some limitations in terms of scaling, you know, because I am only one person. Whenever I have the chance to work with a team or with an individual, then there is a lot of transformation that can happen. However, the topic of scaling, I have to say, I haven't quite figured it out yet. Because when we're talking about scaling, then people do need to learn. They do need to learn. And then that's when it's kind of gets tricky. But I have to say, when I am patient enough, there is the moment that comes that my, you know, a client or another says, oh, I think we need to learn, you know, I think this team needs to learn this or more of that. I think we don't fully understand how this works. And then it's pull, you know, okay, there is a need. They identified the need. They figured out it's a priority. And now there is an openness to take that step.
I would love to explore this a bit further with maybe an example. So a lot of organizations that I work with, they're kind of changing their style, you know, or they have been changing their style over the years, and they notice that collaboration is important, including people in decision-making is important. And now what they do is they kind of open everything up. And then after a while, what I hear is a lot of complaints about now everybody feels like they need to weigh in with their opinion at any point. And we don't really make decisions anymore. It's just everybody gets so afraid because everybody's involved now. How do you respond to that? How do you deal with that?
Yeah, I see this too, Johannes. I see this too. And I see, it's a shame because I think it's very well intended. You know, it's like, okay, we're going to do it all together now. And then it's kind of more or less obvious that you're going to bump into those kind of situations. So what people often don't understand is that when it comes with to collaborative decision-making, about, okay, I'm going to make up a number right now, but about 75%, that's a very subjective number, right, of the success of this a collaborative process is what happens before you get to the point where you ask people if they have any objections and concerns. So things like who decides, who has authority to decide who is affected by this decision, who should be involved in this decision, to which degree should they be involved? What is the problem that you're trying to solve? Is that problem agreed by everyone? Or is it just somebody's ideas that that's a problem? How was that proposal created? Was it created by one individual that has a lot of authority and, you know, good ideas, but hasn't considered alternatives from the team? Or was there a collaborative process where people had a chance to bring in their perspective? And so on and so forth. And I would say even things like, what's the purpose of the organization? What are the values under which you operate? What are the goals you're pursuing, short-term and long-term? All of this information is relevant because what it does, it's kind of putting in place some constraints in terms of how that decision-making process will take place. And what qualifies as an objection and what not? You know, what is it that is within the scope of consideration when you're going to maybe evolve the proposal and so on? So that's what I see. I think there is a lot of confusion when you're just saying, okay, we're going to decide this all together, and basically there's no boundaries. Even though I would say there are always boundaries, whether you make them explicit or not. And if you don't make them explicit and you say, well, you can bring whatever you want, and then somebody brings something that you don't like, you're going to be like, oh, wait a minute. I think we need to clarify this bit. And it's very unfortunate when it happens in that order, because then people feel disenfranchised.
You just hit on one other point that I would be really interested in. And just to slightly nerd out for a moment, because I'm often interested in just way organizations are structured. And in typical traditional organizations, we would see a clear hierarchy that is displayed in an organizational chart, which kind of shows what the power dynamics are. Essentially, the higher up you go, the more decision power someone has. And what I kind of like about Sociocracy 3.0 is that it's not that it just goes in the opposite direction, that we say we completely flatten everything and just because you just mentioned there's always a boundary and we need to be explicit about this. And so it sits somewhere in between, I would say, in the way I would interpret it. What's the experience in organizations? Because in traditional organizations, we see that there is a view on power dynamics, but in reality, decisions often get made in different ways or in informal ways, or it really depends on how long someone has been in the company, for example, or like if you know someone else and you can talk to the right people. Is there any way that Sociocracy 3.0 addresses this, or how do you handle this topic of decision-making power, which might be visible and formal or invisible and informal? Any ideas on that?
So I would start by saying, if it works, having it informal and not explicit, then carry on. The issues, there are issues that come up though when it's not explicit who can decide about what, or you have something on the paper but it's happening something else in reality. So one key aspect is that whenever you, let's say I delegate some responsibility to you for, you know, a new product that we're developing in our organization, and I'm going to put together a domain description that clarifies what the purpose is of this new role you're taking on, what are the key responsibilities you have, and there I'm also going to explain any constraints that you should be aware of, which might be things about, okay, you can decide about these kinds of things, but when you bump into decisions about X, you'll need to consult with this person or whatever, you know. So we clarify all these aspects and we say, I say, okay, it seems like a good idea or like good enough for me. What do you think? Because you're the one who's going to do it. So we have that conversation, we evolve it together, we reach an agreement, and then you get on and do stuff. And often when you start doing things, you're going to basically going to be like 90%. Well, in some cases, okay, it's exaggerated. It can be up to 90%, quite different to our initial estimate, especially if it's something new and it's a role hasn't existed before and so on. So we're going to set an evaluation date. We're going to say, okay, you do this for 1 month and let's check in 1 month and see how's it going, what did you learn, what should change, and so on. So, and let's say we're kind of more clear on where the boundaries are, or we added some things, we removed some things. And then we check in again, maybe in 3 months or 6 months or 1 year. So I would say one of the key effective distribution of responsibilities and authority in organization is to regularly review and evolve your agreements. Because what that allows you is to have always a representation of who does what and who can decide on what that is representative of the actuality of what people do. And you have the chance to formalize this or to say, actually, I've seen you sort of made those kinds of decisions on your own, but there is a reason why that's not appropriate in this case and we should change it. Or in other cases, well, you know, you could decide this on your own or with your team and I don't need to be included anymore. So it just allows what I was saying in the beginning, more conscious way of collaborating. You might do exactly the same thing that you're doing already, but it's more intentional, more rather than kind of random and ad hoc.
My experience, that is also something that makes it much easier when we work in a group, because now we can see what it is and we can talk about it and then we can ask that question of intentionality. Is that what we want or should we change it? And maybe the informal way is actually the better way, and then we maybe make it the formal way or keep it informal, whatever. Or maybe we explicitly say this shouldn't be done. But at least then we can kind of have insight into it and make an actual decision.
You know, when you say this, what comes to mind is a few experiences I had where teams had a lot of resistance to actually put down on paper what their responsibilities are and so on. And, you know, with some inquiry, I understood later on, even though nobody kind of said it out loud, that there was a lot of vulnerability around sort of being found to have some responsibilities that they didn't take care of and being blamed for it. Or I think whenever there is a vulnerability around making mistakes and being punished, that those moments when you're trying to kind of pin down the donkey and say, okay, this is where you are and what you're doing, can trigger a lot of vulnerability for people. And I've experienced at times kind of all sorts of unexplainable delays and, oh no, but no, we don't need this. And, you know, and this is what I mean with sometimes you're trying to solve a problem, but then, you know, the things from under the rug come out. Because what I've experienced is that if people try to push, okay, no, we are going to do this, and this is the, you know, your task to define, you know, your domain and so on, it's not very helpful. But if you start the conversation around, okay, what's happening behind, you know, what is the underlying motive that people don't want to do that? I've, you know, people in a safe to speak environment, they will open up about those things. And so the thing about, I don't like to use the term psychological safety because so many people are kind of trashing it in some ways, but being able to say what your experience is in the team or organization without being punished for it goes a long way.
All right, I'm also very much interested in your own journey and how you are developing at the moment, so I have two questions about that. The first one is, has your thinking about S3 changed over the years? Did you have any, any convictions or any mental models that you really held on firmly in the beginning that you had to let go of or that just changed? You already mentioned that you're much less using the actual term S3 or specifically mentioning what it is. Anything else that has evolved?
So, I mean, the first thing that came to my mind was this topic of willingness. So I already knew conceptually and rationally that collaboration only works when everybody involved is willing to collaborate. And if somebody doesn't want to, then you have a problem. So you need to solve that first before anything. And many or none of the S3 patterns would work in a context where there is no willingness to collaborate. So I knew this already logically, but I've had the last couple of years an experience that kind of showed me discovered in a very intimate way what that means when you want to do stuff. There is even like what seemed to be a common purpose, but there is no, you know, some people, they don't want to put in the effort. They're looking to sabotage things rather than contribute and so on. And this is something that, you know, as somebody who kind of always saw and still sees, I think, the best in people, it was a very tough lesson to learn and to kind of accept that actually this is a reality for many people. You know, many times people ask like, oh, but what if, you know, because this person doesn't want to and so on. And my answer would be like, yeah, you cannot force people to do stuff. It's quite painful, that realization. So the caveat, okay, people need to be willing, it's big. And for those people out there who find themselves in trying to make collaboration happen when again and again some people, they just are not willing to do the work, I would say it's a showstopper. So that's one thing. And yeah, that I'm not using the terminology and so on. I'm not using it because I said, you know, people are resistant to it, but also because I feel like I don't need it. I can communicate in a way that, you know, it still lands with people. Those principles are sort of integrated in my being by now. But I don't think this is so easy to achieve for people who haven't studied deeply and practiced this. So what changed? I think I used to be more hopeful in terms of, okay, you know, people come to a training and they do a few sessions and they're off you go, change the world, you know. And I think right now I am much more with the question, how do we scale this? And I think the thing that can scale easily and has scale is the resonance people feel with the principles. They do, you know, a lot of people say, yeah, I do want to live like this. I do want to collaborate like this. They might even have experiences where they see this happening, maybe for a short while or in a certain project, and they know it's possible. But how to bring it to that scale, I still don't know. And it's kind of humbling to say this after 10 years or 12, I don't know how many, and after training so many people and after working with many organizations, it is a humbling place to be. Now my colleague has hopes that AI can help with this, so I'll see about that. I'm unconvinced, but curious.
Is there anything that you're reading or learning at the moment that might influence the further development of S3 or the way you practice it?
Yeah, in terms of the development of S3, I kind of have this sense that S3 has like a mind of its own and like a a direction of its own that is beyond, you know, my direction and what I think and it should go. It does come about through the synergy of myself and my two colleagues. And the direction it has been developing the last years is to kind of sort of write the code, you know, the literature that describes some of these concepts and patterns in a way that I would say is quite dry and almost academic, you know. So this is I see it's needed and useful, and at the same time the thing that is the question I carry is how to make this alive and how can people have an embodied experience of what we're talking about, because it's just not possible through reading a text, I would say. I am studying organizational constellations at the moment and learning about it. And I've chose this path because I felt like I need to learn about the stuff that you cannot see, you cannot write like on a paper and describe. It's not a process that is logical, but there's stuff happening in the field of an organization that cannot be explained with my usual mental models. So that's what I am learning, and it kind of brings me to a complement to the structure, the rules of the game, the concepts, the ideas, combined with the actual people's sense of things and the experience they have in the organization.
All right, to wrap it all up, is there anything that you could recommend that people could try? Something small, maybe from S3, or maybe something else that you would like people to try? What is something they can do today, tomorrow, to get some kind of benefit or kind of increase the way people collaborate in an organization?
Okay, so one thing that came to my mind is this. When you're in a situation where you need to make a decision with others, rather than asking them, do you agree with this, to ask instead, do you have any objections? So, I mean, most of the time you might need to explain what you mean by an objection, but even intuitively people know objection is a kind of a showstopper, because you're seeing something that it's a problem, is some kind of impediment you want to avoid, or maybe there is an improvement that is worthwhile. So when you're asking people, do you agree, then it invites very much my personal opinion, my how does this sit with me, and so on. When you ask, do you have any objections, it invites me to think, do I see a problem with this? Is this good enough? And that in itself is very easy to shift to make, and it can have massive consequences.
I just had that conversation today with people. So thank you for mentioning that. Lily, thank you so much for your time. Is it correct that people can find out more about you at lilydavid.com and about Sociocracy 3.0 at sociocracy30.org? Is that correct?
Yes, exactly.
Okay. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Johannes.
I hope this session has given you some concrete ideas for your own transformation challenges. At Holisticon, we provide companies with holistic support, from strategy and technology to organizational change. If this sounds interesting, please feel free to contact us. You can find all the information you need at holisticon.de. And don't miss our next Transform Together session on June 23rd at 1 p.m. Central European Summer Time. I will be talking to Alexei Kravitsky about his new book, 10X Org, and his org topologies approach. See you then.